record this now. And we are so excited to have Rachel join us and give us over some Torah. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. So before I start, I wanted to just acknowledge, so wonderful to see so many familiar faces and names on the screens. Special shout out, especially to my parents, both sets, my parents and my in-laws, and my sister who are here, and my sibling in-laws as well. Very big schus to share Torah in front of you. Of course, to acknowledge the Bermans, Zev and Judy, on your generous sponsorship year after year, really a tremendous dedication to Women's Talmud Torah, and we really appreciate it. And also to acknowledge the dedication of this year, which is in memory of Mr. Irving Montauk, a very generous philanthropist, Atzal, whose contributions to women's Torah learning has helped me be here today. So to acknowledge him. I'm going to go ahead and share screen, if that's okay with everyone. So there's also, I see Moshe put the Daf Mekoros in the chat box as well. Also shout out to Moshe from across the table. So here we go. Let's find this. Share. Okay. Thumbs up from everyone. Can we see? Great. Okay. When I was in high school, there was a SAT tutor named Professor Sinclair. Those of you who went to Central or Center Children's Central may be familiar with him. He was a self-identifying Noahide. And I always found that fascinating. What does it even mean to be a Noahide? I thought that was a really cool, cool idea. Is there a community of you guys? How do you practice? And I kind of held on to a lot of questions about what it means to be a Noahide for a lot of years. And therefore, when this year in my GPAT's Morning Seder Limud, we had the opportunity to further explore the seven Noahide laws, the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, I was really thrilled and really excited. And I wanted to share with you today some thoughts and ideas I've had about that Limud. And I figure that a good place to start would be the very beginning. I've heard that's a very good place to start, which would be, what are the seven Noahide laws? What are the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach? So actually, that's a pretty contested question. There's a very big debate in the Gemara about what those laws are. And I figured I'd bring the most standard list. If you look with me at this first source, which is this the same copy? Okay, I'm not sure if those who opened it from the doc, it might have numbers on it. I may have opened the one that doesn't have numbers. It's okay. We'll just say the first source, which is a excerpt from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the Gemara quotes a brisa, a source from Mishnaic times, and it says, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Sheva mitzvot nitztavu b'nei Noach. The b'nei Noach were commanded in seven mitzvot, and here they are, dinim, laws, whatever that means, perhaps setting aside a court system of some sort, Birchat Hashem, a euphemism for cursing God, Avodah Zarah, idolatry, Giloy Arayot, prohibited sexual relationships, shvichot damim, murder, v'gezel, robbery, ve'eber menachai, and eating a limb off of a live animal. Now, let's just pause and reflect for a minute. I want to actually open this up to the audience, anyone who feels comfortable posting in the chat. I was wondering if there are any themes or trends that you notice in this list of the seven Noahide laws. Okay, I see some coming in. How do I use this? This is cool. Against violence, okay. Right, because we have no murder, no eating a limb off of an animal. Most of them are don'ts. That's true too, perhaps with the exception of dinim, though the Gemara itself expresses that dinim has a lo tase, a don't do component as well, later on in the same conversation. Okay, very nice. Some parallels to the Ten Commandments. That's right, right? We see the three cardinal sins here, the three biggies, right? Don't murder, don't serve idols, don't have sexual morality is important. So a lot of familiar ideas over here. some other things that I noticed, and perhaps more about man than God. Yes. And I think that's actually, people are driving the point home very well, which is that a lot of these laws seem extremely basic, right? A very kind of just basic how to keep a moral society. Let's not kill each other. Let's have sexual morality. Maybe Eber Menachai could be an expression of let's not be cruel to animals, and, you know, even more so to other humans and living beings. Avodah Zarah and Birchat Hashem and cursing God could be expressions of having respect for a moral authority, creating a court system, really very intuitive laws to create a normative societal functioning. And in fact, there actually is a lot of support in the commentators for the notion that the commandments or the expectations on society at the times of Noah and beyond are rooted in rationalism and general human intellect. So here's going to be our plan for the rest of this year and for the rest of the night. First, we're going to explore what is the role of intuition in human intellect, these universal expectations on society. And then kind of reflecting on ourselves, what is the role of intuition in our own religious observance? I'd like to start with a Radak over here in the second source. Radak was Rav David Kimchi, a 12th century Provençal biblical commentator. And here we have a comment of his on Sefer Yirmiyahu. The context is that Hashem is telling Yirmiyahu that unfortunately he's going to be punishing Bnei Israel for serving idolatry in Eretz Israel. And the Radak says as follows. Ki afilu lo tzivitim. For even if I had not commanded them, velo hizartim, and I hadn't warned them, ala toivot, against these abominations, kimo shelo tziviti velo hizharti hagoyim shayuba mikodem, just as I had not commanded and not warned the other nations that had been there, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, prior to the Jewish people, afal pikein haaretz lo savla otam hatoivot. Even so, the land of Israel was not willing to endure these abominations. The hikia otam, it spit them out. You know, that hikia is the language of to vomit. It ejected them, these other nations. Ki af al pi she'agoyim lo nitzdavu, even though these other nations weren't commanded, hari natan lahem hakel seichel v'bina, God gave them intellect and intuition. Umiderech haseichel, Yesh li shamer mikola toevo, and just based on basic intellect, they should know to guard themselves from abominations. Umila avud Elohim achirim etz ve'evin, and from serving idols. Kol shekein Yisrael shenitzdavu shehu min hadin shetikiyem haaretz. So even more so on Yisrael, who were commanded, it makes sense that the land is going to have to spit them out, and that's God's description of how the Jews are going to be punished and kicked out. And what we see here is a couple of points. First, I found it very noteworthy that the Radak uses the language of lo tzivitim and lo hizartim, right? He did not command them, referring to the general people in Eretz Canaan at the time, did not command them and did not warn them, right? We're talking about the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. We've been referring to them as commandments, but it seems that in Radak's perspective, they're not even direct commandments. They're perhaps just expectations on society. Of course, this is how you treat society. Of course, this is how we live moral lives. And he seems to be, in this context, expressing it specifically about idolatry, but it seems to be a general perspective on how, all right, toivot is a broader term, on abominations, on how we're supposed to see laws on general society prior to the Jewish people, that they're very logical and rational. We can also see more broadly that this perspective, that laws for Bnei Noach are rooted in general human intellect and very logical ideas, from the Margalios Sayam. And the Margalios Sayam is a more recent commentator. His name is Rav Reuven Margalios from the early 20th century. He was an Israeli Talmudist. And he discusses, in the context actually of our sugya in Maseches Sanhedrin, he discusses the story of Mara. Maybe some of us are familiar. Right before the Jewish people got the Torah, they went to Mara. They were complaining that they didn't have water. The water there was bitter. Hashem told Moshe to throw a stick in, a tree in, and the water turned sweet. And the Torah tells us that in that place, the Jewish people had received many mitzvot. In Maseches Sanhedrin, there's a brisa, another source from Mishnaic times, that describes that the Jews received 10 mitzvot at Mara. Seven of them were the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach that had already been accepted by general society. And then there were three additional mitzvot. And one of those mitzvot was dinim. Now, the surprising thing is dinim is something we've just heard. It was on our list. That was one of the Sheva Mitzvot. So Reuven Margalios is looking at that question. He's trying to reconcile. What does it mean that dinim is a new mitzvah if it was also part of the old mitzvot? And this is what he says, if you look along with me. He says, V'hosifu aleim dinim, right? And they added to those original mitzvot, those seven mitzvot, dinim. Im ki adinim heimi sheva mitzvos. Even if the dinim laws were part of the sheva mitzvos b'nei Noah, im koze mechashva hosafa, it's still considered an addition, Kivan Shaya Behem Shino Yisodi, because it has a fundamental change. Shemikodem, because originally Nitztavu Aladin Sikhli Shaladan. The society was commanded on basic intellectual, rational judgment of man. Ubimara, and when they came to Mara, Nitztavu Al Prate Dinim Mishpate Taras Hashem. They were commanded in the detailed laws and rules of God's Torah. And so again, we see this idea that the laws that are commanded to B'nai Noach, to society, are based on seichel, are din sichli shel adam. And that's the context in which they can be understood. And both Margalos Yam and Radak are expressing this, that Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach are rooted in basic seichel. But here's where things get interesting. I came across this excerpt from the Rambam. I didn't feel intellectually honest not to include it, but it does complicate our current picture a little bit. This is what the Rambam says. He's referring to Noachites, to B'nai Noach. Kol ha-mekabel sheva mitzvos v'nizhar la'asosan. Anyone who accepts the seven mitzvos B'nai Noach and is careful to keep them, they're righteous Gentiles. They're really great people. And he receives a portion in the world to come. Fantastic. But here's the caveat. It is only when they accept those mitzvot and do them because Hashem commanded them in the Torah. And he taught us through Moshe Rabbeinu that B'nai Noach had been prior commanded in them. So again, we see the language of commandment, which we had seen in Margalios Hayam, and we did not see in the Radak. The Radak had made it sound like these were just general expectations. But Rambam says, no, they were commandments. Prior to Sinai, way, way back, times of, you know, Noah, there were commandments on society to do these things. And the only way that they get Olam Haba and are considered righteous Gentiles for keeping these basic universal moral norms is if they're doing it because God commanded it to them. Fascinating. Totally not a perspective that I would have expected. And he says further, Aval. If he does them because of just basic rational, judgments, he's not considered a resident convert. He's not a righteous Gentile. v'lo michachmehen, and not even one of their wise ones. Now, I do have to point out this translation. Some of the translations I wrote myself, Safaria doesn't have all of them. This translation comes from Safaria, and I just wanted to note, I don't know if you could see my pointer while I move it, but oh, you can. Okay, great. So it says in the bottom of the translation, for v'lo michachmehen, but merely one of their wise. Complete opposite. Like, they are of chachmehen. I found that a little concerning, but then I thought back and I recalled that this is actually a source I had learned in GPATS in a different context. And I believe I recall, though I didn't double check, so put it full disclosure, that there were multiple Gersa'ot, there are multiple editions of the Rambam on this one, and that some of them say v'lo michachmehen, and some say aval michachmehen. So it could be that the translation could be a typo, or it could be that they were working off of a different piece. But regardless, what we see from here is that perhaps it's not ideal. Yes, the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach are rational, they're logical, perhaps they're intuitive. And yet, according to the Rambam at least, it is not ideal, or perhaps it's even bad, depending on the Gersa, for a Ben Noach to be keeping the mitzvot for that reason. There's supposed to be a sense of commandedness in their acceptance of the mitzvot. Okay. So here's what we've got. We have Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. They're a sound, solid, logical system of law, rooted in intuition, and possibly also supposed to come with a sense of commandedness. Our next step is to bring it back home and ask, what about us? What role does intuition play in our particularistic code of law? When I asked myself this question, the first thing that came to mind was the pasuk in Bereishis that I have below, right? This is the context of Hashem speaking to Yitzchak. He's saying, don't worry, Yitzchak and Rivka, I'm going to protect you during this famine, and I'm going to protect you because of the promises I made to your father, Avraham, who was such a righteous servant. And the pasuk says as follows, Egov asher shama Avraham bekoli, and as much as Avram obeyed me, v'shomer mishmar, v'yishmor mishmarati mitzvosai chukosai v'sorosai, and he kept my charge, my commandments, my laws, and my teachings. And Rashi on this pasuk, in a perhaps a very important comment, describes the difference between these various terms, and I'd like to focus on the mitzvot and the chukim. Rashi states regarding mitzvot, these are divarim she'ilu lo nechtevu riyuyim heim lehitzavot. These are things that had they not been written in the Torah, they would have still been worthwhile to command. Kigon, two things we're somewhat familiar with at this point, gezel v'shvichos damim, just like robbery and murder, right? Things from our list of Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. And we see that within, you know, particularistic normative Torah law, no longer in Sheva Mitzvot land, we have mitzvot that are viewed as rational, basic moral code. In contrast, Rashi says that then there are chukim, there are laws that, in Rashi's understanding, I'm going to actually paraphrase over here a little bit, gives examples like eating pig and wearing shatnez. He says, she'ena ta'am bedavar, they have no reason. Ella, rather, they're gezirot hamelech b'chukosav al avadav. They're simply the decree of a king on his servants. No questions asked, no reason necessary. And so for Rashi, at least some of the Torah, not all of the Torah, but some of the Torah is rooted in intuitive law. There are other commentators, however, are we doing on time? Let's take two. Good. Okay. There are some commentators who view even the chukim as something that perhaps is more logical than we may have thought. And one such example, and I think perhaps the most stark example, is the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar is Rabbi Shlomo Ephraim ben Aaron Lunchitz, who is a late 16th century biblical commentator from Prague. And the context of his comment is, it's a pasuk about the Parah Aduma, the mitzvah of the red heifer. And he's trying to reconcile a difficulty. because in the context of the red heifer, there's a reference to the chukim, and it seems that there's something that are challenging to the outside nations. There's something that make the Jews kind of look bad or embarrassing or laughable because, you know, people don't understand them. And so why are you keeping them? Versus in contrast, later on in Parshat Va'etchanan, there's a description of chukim as being our greatest wisdom, our proof of our great wisdom and discernment amongst the nations. And so Kleoker wonders, why is it that chukim in one place are considered such a, you know, wonderful proof of Jewish supremacy of the Jewish moral code and in our legal code, and another place they seem to be a way that the rest of the world is kind of makes fun of us. And this is how he reconciles. He says, here we go. Tshuva ledavar, here's the answer. There are chukim. Think, keep Rashi in mind while we say this. Rashi, who said there is no reason for a chuk, just a gezeiras hamelech, comes along Kliyakar and he says, no, totally wrong. There are chukim that the human intellect is able to grasp the reason. Okay, so why don't we know the reasons? Zulat sheta'amam nistar michlal ha'amon v'neglehu liyichidei sridei hador. Only thing is, their reasons are hidden from the majority of the nation, and they're only revealed to some select individuals. The para, remember that the context that Kliyakar is talking is the context of the mitzvah of the para aduma. Para zu ta'amam nistar mikol. This red heifer, its reason is hidden from everyone. Mikol adam, sherei Shlomo alav shalom, hisig hakol chutz min hapara. He understood everything other than this one mitzvah. She'amar leha, he rechukam imeni, as he says in Kohelet about it, it's far from me. Lefichach, therefore, ha'umot shomim chuk hapara levad, v'daimonim aleha. Those nations that hear the law, the chuk of Para Aduma alone, of course they make fun of it. They jeer at it. The lahalan, but later on in Parshat Va'etchanan, where we said that it's this proof of Jewish wisdom, nemar et kol achukim ha'ila. The language in the pasuk is all of these laws. Ki ashomim kol achukim michlal, v'yesh behem chukim sheyesh behem ta'am nigle. Because those who hear all the chukim together, and some of those chukim are ones that do have a revealed reason, at least to some people, as a hema yidun yagidun gam al chuk ha'ne'elam ki yesh bo sod. They will testify and say about even the hidden chuk that they don't understand, that it must have a secret reason. V'yitlu achisaron v'kotzer da'as hamasig. And they will blame this lack of understanding on the inadequate knowledge of the one trying to grasp it. And so we see a very different perspective from Kliyakar, from that from Rashi. According to Kliyakar, even the chukim, at least some of the chukim, if not all of them, have a reason, and a reason that's attainable. In addition to the mitzvot, which we know have a reason, are very obvious and clear, like murder and such, but the which are the mishpatim. But the chukim, a lot of them too have a very clear reason, and only a few don't. And we, you know, cover up for those and say, oh, they must also have a reason. And for me, at least, what these sources seem to be giving me the impression of is that there seems to be a value in law being and Jewish law being understandable and logical and intuitive. We're identifying full categories of Jewish law based on them being logical and trying to explain how the ones that don't seem logical really are logical. And yet, is that why we keep mitzvot? Is that why we keep mitzvot? Because they're logical and reasonable? Do we need that piece of information? So the Rambam was very clear regarding B'nai Noach, how he felt about that. Right, we had read the Rambam, and he said that Bnei Noach, they could be considered righteous Gentiles, they get Olam Haba, but only if they keep mitzvot because they were commanded, and not because they're intuitive. And if you think his language is strong and clear about that, it's even stronger regarding Jews. Apologize about that. Okay, here we go. Here's what the Rambam says, and this is actually extremely strong language for Rambam, and I've gotten to see a few Rambams will appreciate why this is a very unusual statement of his. In his commentary on the Mishnayos and Pulin, Rambam says, Sim libcha ala ikar hagadol hanichlal b'mishnah hazos. Pay attention. Rambam's like screaming at us, pay attention. So it's not such a typical thing. To this important fundamental rule that is encompassed in this Mishnah. I didn't bring the Mishnah, it's less relevant to us. The rule is what's important. V'hu masha amar v'sinai ne'esar l'fi sha'ata hareta l'da'as shekol ma sha'anu marchikim o osim hayom ein anu osin ela b'mitzvah se'kadosh baruch hu al yedei Moshe Rabbeinu olav ha'shalom. He says that which it said in the Mishnah and whatever the context was, that it was something was prohibited at Sinai, that was because it's been clearly demonstrated to you that everything that we stay away from in Judaism and everything that we do today in Judaism, we only do because God commanded it to us through Moshe Rabbeinu. Alav Shalom. And so it's very clear for Rambam, at least, it's all about commandedness. And logic, you know, does that totally neglect the Kliyakar and Rashi and everyone who's been trying to understand reasons for mitzvos? No, logic can be a perk. It makes observance more accessible, maybe more comfortable for us when things make sense. But ultimately, the ultimate expression of our relationship with God is when we say, I'm doing this because you told me so. Because I respect you and you told me to. Regardless of whether I resonate with it. And I believe that's what Rambam's trying to tell us, both to Bnei Noach, to general society, and to Jews in particular, that the important thing in commandments is the relationship with the commander. Now, Rav Soloveitchik really drives this point home in a beautiful essay of his that I highly recommend the whole thing. We won't read that all together tonight, called The Common Sense Rebellion. Happens to very conveniently be on our Parshat HaShavua. It's discussing the rebellion of Korach. Many of us grew up with this story, right? Korach comes and rebels against Moshe and Aaron and says, it's not fair. It doesn't make sense. I don't agree with your distribution of power. Kulanu kidoshim. I brought the psukim here. We're actually not going to read them inside, but good to have as a resource. We're all holy and it doesn't make sense and it's not fair. And Rashi, it's a great story, quotes the Midrash Tanhuma, who talks about how did Korach present his case? He came to Moshe and he came with a fully blue garment of Techeles and said, hey, is my four-cornered garment obligated in tzitzis, if Techeles? And Moshe said, of course it is. And he says, that's ridiculous. If one piece of Techeles, one string of Techeles is enough to exempt an entire white garment, then if I have a full garment of Techeles, it needs another string. It doesn't make any sense. And he uses that as his demonstration that Moshe is not being rational and his distribution of power is not following common human logic. And the Rav will read it in his own words because he does a better job than I will. But his point is that he identifies that Korach's missing something really important. By believing that common sense is the root of Jewish law, he's missing that in Judaism, we believe there's something way more important than common sense that overrides human intellect, and that is the commandments of God. I'm going to read it in his words. He says as follows, the rallying cry which Korach chose was common sense. He proclaimed that all reasonable people have the right to interpret Jewish law according to their best understanding, for all the community are holy. In down-to-earth logic, the lowliest woodcutter is the equal of Moses. This appeal to popularism evokes considerable support because it promises freedom from centralized authority. It flatters the people's common intelligence, and it approves the right of each Jew or group of Jews to follow their own individual judgment. And there's something very compelling about that. I think that Thoreau really tries to help us resonate with what Korach is saying. We like for things to make sense. However, what Thoreau goes on to say is that when we rely on human intellect, inevitably there will be subjectivity and there will be fallibility. And when we rely on my gut tells me this and it feels right to do that, there no longer will be a Jewish tradition because each person will feel differently. And this is what he expresses. However, we do not regard the qualitative and subjective experience as primary. Rather, the objective act of performing the mitzvah is our starting point. The mitzvah does not depend on the emotion. Rather, it induces the emotion. One's religious inspiration and fervor are generated and guided by the mitzvah, not the reverse. The goal is proper kavana and genuine dveikut, but these can be religiously authentic only if they follow the properly performed mitzvah. The emotion generated by the mitzvah is circumscribed and disciplined by the halacha, and its character is not left open to the possible distortion, by human desires and fantasies. The halachically defined mitzvah has quantitative dimensions and precise parameters, and these establish the authenticity of the genuinely Jewish religious experience. The Rav's description of Korach's mistake, I think it really helps elucidate the Rambam in terms of why is it so bad to keep commandments, because especially intuitive commandments, right? Let's think about the mitzvah of Bnei Noah, because they make sense. At the end of the day, intuition and logic definitely play a role. They're important, and we believe in having a moral code, and we call things out for being rational and intuitive. However, by settling for mere human reasoning, we miss out on something much greater. We miss out on, as the Rav says, a genuinely Jewish religious experience and a deep relationship with the divine. Thank you so much, everyone. I'm going to stop sharing now. That's all I had to share, and I'm happy to discuss further with anyone who would like.
That was wonderful. Thank you so much. If anybody has any questions, any comments, please feel free.
I want to say thank you. Thanks for a beautiful share.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here during bedtime duty. I appreciate it.
I was educating my daughter while putting her to bed.
Thank you, everybody, for attending. Thank you, Rachel. This was really wonderful and a really wonderful way to end our series. We look forward to restarting our series, hopefully in the fall, after Yontif, probably. So everybody keep an eye out for that. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Judy and Zev, for coordinating the GPAT series and for sponsoring.
Absolutely, our pleasure.